These things are as given from one shepherd's call. My son, beyond this, be forewarned above all. The making of writing increases so much. Much studying increases tiring as such. Or the making of many books is wearisome to the flesh. In another translation, that was from Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verses 11 and 12, part of verse 11 and verse 12 of chapter 12 of Ecclesiastes, our daily scripture for today, little children, from the Word Green translation of 2004. So now let's resume, shall we, our study of the article, the Ark of Urartu, chapter 3, paragraph 4, which we began yesterday, but it's a very detailed, lengthy, and engaging article, section of the article. It's almost like it could be an article in itself, there's no doubt. It's a very meaty subject because it gives real substantiation to the dating of Abraham, chronologically speaking, because we have this person identified as Gudea who's got dates according to Wikipedia. Maybe I'll save the file later on, but I've saved the Wikipedia article called The Battle of Siddim, in which it says that Chedorlaomer's name is a transliteration of the Elamite compound Kudur Lagomar. So where he's called Chedorlaomer in the Bible, in Genesis chapter 14, which is a well-known section talking about this king, Chedorlaomer. Many people have seen this and talk about this. So we see from that that Laomer is Lagomar. It's got to do with Lagash, the city of Lagash, which is very important because we're going to talk about some of these other things also, but it's very important because if Kudur Lagomar is the same person as Chedorlaomer, which he is because of the simple difference in translation, arriving at the same thing. I just noticed there's a mistyping. I've got to correct the Chedorlaomer here is misspelled. In one instance here, it's Chedorlaomer. There's a missing D there. But if Chedorlaomer is the same person, which he is, as Kudur Lagomar, it's just a difference in the translation. Then Laomer corresponds to Lagash. In other words, Lagomar, he's a servant of Lagomaru, from that Wikipedia article, Battle of Siddim, the battle in which Chedorlaomer was involved and which is described in Genesis chapter 14. However, no such king of Elam is yet known, right? There's no such king called Chedorlaomer, okay? And yet we see a similarity of Kudur Lagomar to Gudea, ruler of Lagash. It's actually very, very similar, right? Kudur and Gudea and Lagomar and Lagash. This is fantastic because even in the quote we gave yesterday, it mentioned Gudea at the end of that quote, Gudea, the younger brother of Urbaba, and at the beginning, well, it was from the Royal Chronicle of Lagash. So Gudea was definitely the ruler of Lagash. This was the Royal Chronicle of Lagash. Okay? So the above-quoted document is significant for its possible important link to the biblical patriarch Abraham. That's the most important aspect of all of this, is that we link him to Abraham. This Chedorlaomer, and in the Bible, Abraham did get involved in this battle because his relative Lot was captured and he had to go and rescue Lot. So after the battle, Abraham got involved in a skirmish himself. So that's another reason for believing, possibly even more so, the book of Jasher, where it mentions that at this time in 2146, when this battle occurred, and which we deduce from the fact that it talks about that in the book of Jasher and says that it was in the we'd have to look it up again, you know, just briefly here. Let's see if I can find it. Where is it? Jasher. Jubilees. Well, that's Jubilees, right? Preservation. I had Jasher here. Oh, I went and shut it down. But we have it. Let's see. I know we've got it here. There it is, Book of Jasher, Chapter 5. So we'll just open it up, and we'll go to 13 again. So here we go. Yeah, it mentioned that that Abraham was in the land of Canaan, and after 3 years of being there, he was 58 years old, so he was 55 when he arrived. And in the 10th year, it says in verse 12, of Abram's dwelling in the land of Canaan, first reference was from verse 9. In verse 12 of Jasher 13, it was in the 10th year of Abram, so that was when he was 65, which would be 2141, that Nimrod came to fight with Chedorlaomer, and we know Chedorlaomer won that battle. But in the 5th year of Abram, this is when this battle of Sidim occurred, according to verse 11. These people, it mentions the kings, all the kings of the cities of the plain, like it talks about in Genesis chapter 14, got involved in this battle against Chedorlaomer. So it was a very big thing in the 5th year of Abram's dwelling, which would be when he was 60 years old. Very conveniently, because 60 is easier to calculate. 2206 being the birth of Abraham minus 60 is 2146 in the BCE time period. So, that was where I went and looked for the book of Jasher, right. So, yeah, so we have this 2146 being the time of this battle. Okay. You can see why it takes so long to do these things carefully, because it requires cross-referencing everything, carefully comparing everything. But 2146, if that's correct, okay, for the battle of this thing, which the book of Jasher gives us, using using also our knowledge of the chronology that we obtained in our chronological studies, which gave us the birth of Abraham in 2206. So we have 2146 as his 5th year in Canaan, since he was there from his age of 55. And this is his 60th year, right? 60 years after 2206 is 2146 in the BCE time period. Add 60 to this, you get 2206. So that's how we know that's right. But is it the right date? That's the question. So, I mean, we look at some of my other articles, too. There's a picture of the gravestone of Noah's wife, by the way, which is shown in this section of the article also. Isn't it? Where is it? If we go down further, there it is. Yeah, it's right there. So there's a magnified version of it that we just looked at. We're going to have to kind of move along here, because otherwise we'll never get through this, and we can come back to it later. But in the article Preservation in chapter 5, verse 12, I wrote that Africanus dated Ninus year 1 to 2141, exactly the same as what we did, or what I did. 2141 BCE, 2141 BCE, the date of year 1 of the Assyrian king Ninus at the commencement of the Assyrian Empire, which is very significant, right? Because it's the beginning of an empire. But that's also just 5 years after this battle of Sidim in 2146, counting backwards in the BCE time period. 5 years before 2141 is 2146, which is, so therefore the 2141 is year 10 of Abraham's being in Canaan, according to the book of Jasher, and that's the time period when Gudea conquered Nimrod, or as he's called in the book of Genesis, and also in the book of Jasher, he's called Amraphel, the king who was the king of Shinar. But Ninus is not pronounced Ninus, it's pronounced Ninus. But Ninus, who is this unknown person, seems to be now identified then. You know, he started ruling in 2141, the same year that Chedorlaomer defeated Nimrod. So is it possible Ninus is Gudea? Well, we look at another thing. The next chapter of the article, Preservation, which is another earlier article, which I just quoted from there in chapter 5, paragraph 12, where it said 2141 was the year one of Ninus. Okay. In 6 and 11 of that article, I write in that article, Preservation, that Sir Walter Raleigh stated that there was a King Arioch of Elis who joined Ninus in all his quests. King Arioch of Elis. Genesis 14. Is there anybody that looks like King Arioch of Elis? Arioch, king of Elasar. Does that not sound like Arioch? Let's go back. Arioch of Elis? Doesn't sound like Arioch of Elasar. Sounds like the same person. If he joined Ninus in all his quests, then that's further proof that Ninus is Gudea, which is a phenomenally important identification. Okay, so we're going to continue our reading now. Wikipedia offers a most comparable date for Gudea at 2144. This is the Ark of Urartu article. We're still in chapter 3, paragraph 4. Gudea claimed to have conquered the city of Anshan in Elam in the sixth year of his rule. He conquered Elam, in other words, in that year. And he's known as the king of Elam, so the sixth year of his rule must have been important, right? That's 5 years after he began to rule. The question is, when did he begin to rule? Well, if he began to rule in 2146, then he conquered Elam in 2141, which is exactly the beginning of the rule of Ninus, right? And this Chedorlaomer is known as king of Elam, and maybe it was the conquest of Elam that was the beginning of the kingdom of Assyria. Maybe. I mean, that would be consistent. Certainly, it lines up perfectly. But, I mean, it makes sense because, you know, this Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, that was his title. So, that makes perfect sense, doesn't it? And Gudea claimed to have conquered the city of Anshan in the sixth year of his rule. Okay, so that would be in our chronology. Sixth year of his rule, 2141. But that's not far from 2144. Is it? Which is the Wikipedia date for Gudea. 2141. No matter whether we take that as 2144 as year 6 or year 1, year 6 would be, in that case, 2139, which isn't far from 2141, is it? I mean, it's remarkably close. How could we doubt that this is the same person now, it looks like? But Jasher, also 13:12-14, which we've been reading. Where is it? There it is. It talks about the 10th year of Abram and Chedorlaomer having at one time been one of the princes of Nimrod, and so on. And then when Nimrod saw that the cities of the plain had rebelled, that's curious, he came with pride to war with Chedorlaomer. So let's look at the Bible again. Yeah, it's a little bit different from the account where it looks like Amraphel is ruling together with Chedorlaomer, right? They're on the same side, it looks like, in the biblical account, which is probably true, but that occurred 5 years before the battle between Nimrod, as we just said, from the book of Jasher. And Chedorlaomer, the battle between those two occurred 5 years after this other battle of Sidim. So it's not really any kind of contradiction because of that. Okay, but I mean, obviously there's confusion in these accounts that are so ancient. Maybe there's more to the story than what we're actually getting also. But okay, throughout history, many have written of the great king of Assyria, Ninus, how he was the son of Belus, or not the son of Belus. Some people said not the son of Belus, how he ruled much later, or some people said he never ruled. Ninus got assistance in legend by the Arabian king Arius. That was the part, the story of Ninus, okay, that mentioned Arius. Now, I don't have a quote for that, but what does Genesis 14:1 say? If not Arioch, king of Elasar. Arius of Arabia with Elasar, identified as Larsa, and Larsa annexed to Lagash by Ianatum, grandson of Urnina. So there actually is a city called Elasar, or Larsa, that was close to Lagash. And this Arioch, king of Elasar, we already said, evidently, and according to Sir Walter Raleigh, accompanied Gudea on all of his, or Ninus, I should say. Yeah, he accompanied Ninus. And therefore, Ninus is Gudea because Elasar is, or Larsa is very close to Lagash. So, King Arioch of Elis, who joined Ninus in all his quests, is the same thing. It sounds like us saying this king of Larsa, which was very near to the city, that city Larsa being very near to Lagash, he joined Gudea on all his quests. And by the way, there are 26 statues of Gudea, or more statues that we've got over the years of archaeology that they've dug up regarding, you know, that there are statues of the person called Gudea, which also would tend to indicate that he was a pretty prominent person, although he was humble also, by the way. But Ctesias dated Assyria as 1,000 years before the Trojan War, which amounts to 2183, with Troy dated as following 1183. That's from no, don't tell me that. That's from Eratosthenes. Yeah, he's the one who dated the Trojan War, 1183, which I can just search for. There it is. The sack of Troy, 1183 was the date of Eratosthenes, but he lived about 276 BCE as his birth, which is after Ctesias, who lived at the time of Artaxerxes the second, which is in the 5th century BC, so 400 and something BC, so that was long before, like decades before Eratosthenes. So he wouldn't have known the date that Eratosthenes had for the Trojan War. So this is just an approximate date, 2183. We don't know what date Ctesias thought the Trojan War was. But when we did that, 2183, right, by adding 1,000 to 1183, if that was the date that he obtained from, if he started with 1183 for the Trojan War, and that's 2183 is the beginning of the kingdom of Assyria, then, if there were 55 years for the first king Belus, then 2127 was the beginning of the king Ninus, as some put that, because they think that Ninus was the son of Belus, which he wasn't, of course. But if we do that, we get 2127. Akkad was defeated by the Gutium in 2128 BCE, according to one article in Wikipedia at one time, when the dynasty of Sargon the Great ended with the reign of Sharkalishari, translated King of Kings. It is not obvious that these two events were coincidental, corresponding events, because both the seeming both because of the seeming shortage of people named Ninas at this time. I'm starting to rush this. I don't want to rush this, but we're running out of time if I don't. Sharkly Shari, okay. It is not obvious that these two events, in other words, the end of Sharkly Shari's reign and the beginning of the rule of Ninas, those are not connected at all, as far as we know. It's not obvious. Both because of the seeming shortage of people named Ninas at this time, and the 13-year shift between a date computed by reigns of 36 Assyrian kings, in total more than 1,300 years. And we call it 1,360, which agrees with Diodorus Siculus, from the time of, I think it's 781, all the way back to, right, 781 plus 1,360 is 2,141, I believe that's right. Yeah, it is. It is right. I just did it in my head. From the last king of Assyria, 781. In our chronology, 781 was the last king of Assyria, and the end of him was that year, 781, which was computed by Ctesias from the days of Artaxerxes, who was Artaxerxes II, actually, if I look, I just looked it up. An adjustment to 2,141 from 2,128 is afforded by raising the date for the sack of Babylon from 1531 BCE to 1544 BCE, as both a solar and a lunar eclipse are said to have occurred in the month of Sivan in the year of that event. So when I looked at how some people date the sack of Babylon in 1531, I said, well, let's look for those eclipses, and we couldn't find any in that year, so I found them in 1544, so we could raise it by 13 years, which would apparently raise the 2128 13 years to 2141, 13 years earlier, in other words. Makes a perfect alignment with our chronology then, because we see both of those types of eclipses in Sivan of 1544. That's from my notebook 26, page 141. We would rather it not be we. This is the most important statement I make here in all of this. I didn't want to be the one who discovered Gudea, because nobody will believe me. Right? Because who am I? I'm the first one. If I'm the first one, they're not going to believe it. We would rather it not be we who are the first to declare about Gudea, for the full burden of proving the first such identification, that Gudea is the legendary Ninas himself. And I say that with a great deal of fear and trembling at the time I write this. January 13th, 2011, of the Common Era. This we say, I continue, while no one has ever successfully identified Ninas, founder of the first great Assyrian Empire, no one's ever successfully identified Ninas, founder of the first great Assyrian Empire, as long as we say on Assyria, quoting the late Mr. Henry Bostwick, and this is the quote, and this is the end of this paragraph, quote, "It is vain to seek either for the founder or the time of its foundation," end quote. Speaking about Assyria, that's what Mr. Henry Bostwick said. So I ended with that because I like to do that, because there was somebody who I was reading at the time, who wrote like that, who proved his point first, and then he stated, I saw this somewhere, or maybe I didn't see it exactly the way I do it here, or maybe I originated this, I don't know, but I found it was better to prove my point or make a discovery first, but then after you make the discovery and present the result, present the exact opposite of that discovery. In other words, the statement that says it's impossible, present that afterwards. It's impossible, it's vain, is what Mr. Bostwick said. It's vain to seek either for the founder or the time of its foundation. So what did we just do then? We just identified Gudea as Ninas, and then we quoted the impossibility of, seemingly, of that. which I think is the proper way. It's the most amusing way also to do it, I think. It's hilarious, actually, but I'm so terrified at the time I do it. It's not quite feeling like hilarity at the time. Now let's continue with the Raw Expedition movie, part 2. Part 2-6, that is the sixth part of part 2. And let's see if we have everything set up here to do that. I think we do.
Chasing from behind, the Dra rolled like a seabird. She tipped her tail up and let them pause under, until a giant wave turned her sideways, and sliding down, she broke her rudder. And two nights we struggled helplessly without any kind of steering control, taking all the waves over us sideways.
The sail must come down. The wind catching it is wrenching the boat around to port, but at the same time the sail, if lowered, might be shredded or carried overboard by the waves. The situation is dangerous. They work anxiously and cautiously lest they capsize. Taking a leaf from the ancient Egyptian war books, they have fastened a security rope to the rudder oar blade, so at least the broken section is trailing behind and can be saved. The powerful waves snap the tree trunk like a toothpick.
Hello? We're turning again. Okay, just a minute.
And now they're in a desperate quandary. In the early days of calm, they threw all heavy wood overboard so that they wouldn't sink. Now they have no spar left to splice the broken log. They make a scale model of the shattered parts to see whether any of the fragments can span the long gap from the empty fork at sea level up to the steering bridge. They tie the rudder blade to the longest fragment of the handle, using ropes to give flexibility. In any case, they do not have a nail or screw in the entire boat.
Push it in. George, it is not coming down. Can you pull your starboard preventer?
They get back on course again. Ra raises her tail to the waves and rides along with the trade winds towards America. The broken rudder oar is working once more. The other one is jammed in a twisted fork and has to be chiseled free by the Japanese K. At last, the vessel is under full control, and they are able to hoist all sail. But with one oar broken and stunted, steering has become terribly complicated.
Okay, a perfect place to stop again at the 30-minute mark for the end of part six of the Adventures of Thor Heyerdahl, The Raw Expedition Part 2, a movie from 1972 where they were crossing the Atlantic, and can you believe it that they didn't even have a nail or a screw on the boat crossing the Atlantic? They wouldn't have any nails or screws. They had hammers, but no nails or screws. I mean, it just makes me shake my head, and yeah, like the song of Jim Croce, all I can do is shake my head. You might not believe it's true, but working at this end of Niagara Falls is an undiscovered Howard Hughes, as he's saying in his song, working at the Car Wash Blues, before his passing in 1973 in a plane crash. Now, how old was he? I'm trying to think when he died. Was he... He was born on the same exact day of the year that I was. Jim Croce, actually, same birthday. And I didn't know that. All the years I listened to Jim Croce when I was younger, we didn't have Wikipedia. I couldn't look it up. Didn't know that at all. One more thing I want to mention before we go today is I made an update to the Born and Raised article. Maybe I've got it here that I can show, or maybe I don't. Where is it? Did I close it? There it is. Yeah. So in this article, in paragraph 1112, I made an update here where I explained further how the value of phi was obtained using this calculation. So that is there for your edification. Now there's a note at the end showing the date it was updated, which was today's date, October 1st, 2024, when you obtain the value of phi according to this method of calculation using the two factors of the number 2268, you get a number that differs from the value of phi used in the Great Pyramid by 16 parts per million. And that's it for today's study, October 1st, 2024 of the Common Era. The time, 1919 hours, North American Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. Thank you for listening and watching. And in my behalf, this is Lib Dusty. And this is Cassie, saying bye for now. That was The Ark of Urartu to the Orient Express, the end of Chapter 3, Paragraph 4, which was a rather lengthy study of Gudea, identified as Ninus. So, bye for now.